The show that doesn't grab them by the but does occasionally kick them in the It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. On this exciting edition, we go from Maui to the rest of the world as we cover everything from missing persons to missing sanity. And maybe, coming up, some missing rights for women? It has been a tumultuous week, and we have got a lot of it to review. So, before we get into the reviewing part, some introing part. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. I am a critical thinker, a problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane. Always centered in common sense and found at a website, shaggyjenkins.com. Joining me from the windy city of Chicago, where right now, let's just go ahead and say, I bet the weather's better there than it is here on Maui. Please welcome Knowledge Headquarters himself, Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, how you doing, my brother?
Man, today has been a hot and humid day here on Maui. And when I say humid, we are not used to humidity on the island. We have these trade winds that take it about. But since everybody started messing with the environment, we don't get those trade winds as much. So this summer is on track to be one of the hottest here on Maui. And we haven't even got into summer proper yet.
Yeah, so here in Chicago, it's Jekyll and Hyde. It doesn't make up its mind yet. So, you know, one day, for example, like today is like 69 degrees, or I say 68 Maui one degrees. And then, you know, tonight will be like around 45, which is ridiculous. And then tomorrow it will be like 72 and then rain and then down to 40 something again. So it's very inconsistent. So as what I call the hoodie shorts weather. So you see guys, mostly me included, will wear like a hoodie and shorts because you're right in between, you know, it being hot or it being cold. So you got to, you know, dress both parts.
I'm wondering if springtime weather in Chicago actually inspired 1990s LL Cool J's fashion choices.
No one else probably did. there's no such thing as spring anymore. Gone.
No. But before we get to this is the nuclear winter of our lives of the apocalypse, can I talk about a story that's actually happening about 2 miles here on hot and humid Maui, real close to my house, in fact. The Amanda Eller missing person story has kind of taken the nation by storm. One, because here we have a mid-30s yoga instructor, very healthy, very active, outdoor lifestyle kind of woman going on a solo hike into the Maui forest and disappearing without a trace. Now, of course, authorities then found her car, found her wallet, and there has been a massive, massive search effort. A couple of days ago, three of them, in fact, the Maui Fire Department called off their leg of the search and rescue operation, saying at this point, probably going into what's called recovery versus survival hunting. So with that said, the Maui Police Department has kept up their efforts and a massive undertaking of volunteers here on island has been going into the what we call upcountry region day after day after day searching for this person, Amanda Eller. The problem is, Chris, this isn't, and I covered this earlier this week, this isn't the first missing person case here on Maui that's happened within about 2 miles of my house. And the second thing about this story is a lot of people, and I'm going to ask you this for your opinion of this, because you've never seen my home. You've never been here, correct?
Correct.
What do you imagine when I tell you that somebody is missing on Maui? Where do you think, as a person that's never been here, they're going to turn up?
Your guess is as good as mine. I have no answer to that.
See, a lot of people misconstrue Maui, which is a what we call outer island, with our big population sister, Oahu. Now, Oahu is where Honolulu is and the Daniel Inoue Airport. Yeah, that's the main tourist hub. Waikiki is there, you know? It's right. Yeah, so a lot of people go there, and they think that Hawaii is just like that. There's a little bit of a shanty town on the North Shore where all the hippie bohemian surfers live. And then, by and large, it just looks like a very crowded suburb everywhere you go, with cul-de-sacs, duplexes, and condos and townhouses and the such. No, Maui is a former agriculture island. So a lot of the territory that we're actually trying to cover for Amanda Eller, and this is one of the things when people on the mainland keep asking me, he's like, you know, can you tell us about, you know, why haven't they found her yet? It's like, you don't understand the terrain here. Even in daylight conditions, the forest that she's went up into, the Makawao Forest Reserve, which about that way from the studio, the Makawao Forest Reserve is dangerous even in daylight conditions because of a very uneven and, once again, island-based topography. That means there's sharp rises, there's muddy hills, there's lava rocks that break free, there's fallen foliage and things like that. So even in ideal conditions, you got to be pretty athletic to go hiking up there, you know? There's some light range stuff, but not, by and large, nobody goes up there unless they're really serious about two things. One, serenity, which the Maui Islands offers in droves, and two, to get away from it all. However, lately, it's taken a sinister third, and now, with Amanda Eller's case entering into almost a week since she has been gone, and efforts not finding anything despite using regular search dog, cadaver search dogs, extensive volunteers that actually include, get this, families of others that are still missing without any kind of clue. So families that have already lost people this year alone are helping search for somebody that just went missing. And that's the crazy thing, that when we talk about Maui and paradise, that, you know, we always like, hey, let's talk about Maui on the show more. When we actually talk about it, Chris, here lately, if you knew that there's a good chance that if you're a woman, you can get a case of missing without a trace, how likely are you to come here?
Slim to none and slim left town. Probably not at all.
Right. But see, every single night I have to kind of go to sleep. And I mean, I don't want to play into like fear and paranoia.
Right.
But every night I go to bed, I have to roll over and be like, my wife is physically here. Okay. We're good. Because some of these disappearances have happened within, I mean, less than a 3-minute jaunt from my front porch. And with all of the efforts around Amanda Eller, though, I figured I would just give like a brief update, because I've been running back and forth and seeing volunteers. Although volunteers are kind of slacking off as the, you know, likelihood of a live recovery seems kind of grim, more and more and more people are ramping up efforts. As a matter of fact, they've blanketed, get this, Maui has an anti-billboard law, Chris. We can't put up billboards.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we can't put up roadside signage. But even to that degree, the police have allowed, and we have seen time and time again, large signs saying missing, $10,000 reward, any information for Amanda Eller. And these signs are going up every single road that leads towards the Makawao Forest Reserve, or what we call the upcountry region. The thing is that the volunteers, even though they're tired and stuff, they're really not making as much headway as you think. Once again, very dangerous kind of territory they're going in. Every single night, we have to suspend search efforts, because if you think it's dangerous in the daylight, you can trip up what you think on flat land and get seriously hurt at dusk. So it's not going to be an easy effort. And sadly, for everybody that's got, like, you know, kind of a hopeful, like, yay, this is going to have a happy ending, I hate to tell you that empirical evidence, time after time after time again, as a matter of fact, Google the words Maui missing person, and look how many of those stories have happened in just the last 5 years. how many of them have never been solved. It's mind blowing. And well, I was going to ask you, Chris, when you were growing up, because I know that Chicago also had kind of a case of missing kids. I think it was back in the 1980s. And it was one of those things where a bunch of people went missing and a lot of people had no idea what was going on. Do you remember those times?
Well, kind of briefly, I grew up in the, 70s and 80s. And as a going in my early teens, I probably didn't pay too much attention about that. And I wasn't warned by my parents about anybody coming up missing during that time. I would think, like anything else, when you're a parent, you give your children a set of rules to come home at a certain time. If you're going to go out, make sure you leave your information where you go to a friend's house or their house number back in the day, landlines and stuff like that, before we got technology or cell phones and the like. And that's what you did. Now, every now and again, somebody may come up missing. That was on the news. It wasn't close to home to us where I lived out, in the South Side of Chicago, in the South Shore area during that time. But every now and again on the news, somebody may come up missing. And, it's disturbing. Now, as over the years, myself becoming a parent, when my wife and me had two daughters, you get concerned, obviously, when you have children, because people out there are evil. They abduct, they do nasty sexual things to children, and God forbid, murder, and people in general. We talk about a certain demographic and a certain age, but when anybody comes up missing, I can only imagine what that's like to go through the agony, because all you want to do is the person to be safe and come back home. It's as simple and basic as that. But when sometimes, like you said before, when all the hours are put in, the volunteer work, you mentioned about the whole 5 years of missing people during that time, it does give you concern. Like you said before, but looking over on your bed and seeing your wife because you're concerned. You love your wife, obviously, and you want to make sure she's safe. And so that's right there is just a commendable trait. And you got to figure what else is going through the family of Amanda Eller at this point. Hopefully get some good news. But you have to be realistic, and you just might have to prepare, if any preparation at all, of maybe some bad news. And not to put a damp light on the whole thing, but you just have to be realistic, and that's the world we're living in.
Yeah, because let's not forget that the similar case kind of happened around the North Shore of Maui with the case of Charlie Scott. That one took a long time to kind of come to any sort of conclusion, but long story short, we had to put her boyfriend in jail for her murder. That's one of the things that is kind of scary about living on an island. You think, hey, trouble can never come up to these shores. No, it's actually quite the opposite. Trouble can never leave these shores. Well, I'm going to move into another story because, I actually could probably talk about, and I hate to say this, crime on Maui for hours because there is such a deep, deep history of it. But Chris, I thought I would talk about, something a little bit bigger. Let's go into Alabama, shall we? I'm going to stop bashing on my home state right now of Hawaii and go into bashing into a state that this week rightfully deserves bashing. Okay, Chris. Alabama just passed a near-perfect abortion ban, basically getting rid of it for all purposes, all across the board. What are your initial thoughts?
Shame on Alabama. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. The bill passed 25-6, denying an amendment that would have made exemptions for cases of rape and incest. So we've known over the years about Roe versus Wade back in 1973, the protection under Roe v. Wade. Let's look at this, for example, just so people know your history about with women who got pregnant in a certain time and era. They would have what they call back alley abortions. They would get the old coat hanger, the wire hanger, and commit these crimes. I won't say crimes, but crimes against the fact that you didn't have any choices back then. That was not a safe environment or a medical environment. You had that. You had some women who would drink Drano. You had some women who would drink poison to get rid of the baby. You had certain women that throw themselves down a flight of stairs to get rid of a baby. When you had Roe v. Wade coming to the 70s, it gave the woman an option to go into a safe medical environment to have this done. Because people don't talk about the horrors that had happened prior to that. You must know your history. And again, you would want the government to stay out of your life as much as possible. And I said on my show recently, when you do things like this, first of all, Governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, who is a lady, mind you, but it doesn't matter. I want to read you what she had on her Twitter account. She tweeted, "Today I signed into law the Alabama Human Life Protection Act. To the bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful statement that Alabamians deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a sacred gift from God." Okay, let's hold the phone.
Yeah.
So what happened to separation of church and state? Does it exist anymore? What if you're an atheist? Well, you don't believe in God. Then what? You are forced to put a God to you because they deem, this Alabama government, that you have to get an abortion, that we will let you know that it is against the law. If a doctor performs an abortion, they might get upwards to 99 years in prison. Upwards 99 years in prison. My point is, we don't need the government in our lives like that. Because what's around the corner? Hey, you got to be in the house by 6 o'clock, you brush your teeth, eat up, and be in bed by 10. Martial law. And it's coming in chapters like that.
Here's the thing that I found not fascinating, but really, really frustrating about Alabama. They seem very, very intent on undoing the last 40 to 50 years of societal change. And I mean, as ridiculous as this sounds, I want people, especially our listeners in Alabama, to seriously consider this. They'll come for the vagina first, but the minority is second. And if they can bring back abortion banning, they can bring back segregation. And it's something that I know it sounds like it's like, oh, God, Shaggy's into fear mongering mode. No, let's not forget that right now, Alabama is one of 14 states across the United States passing these very highly restrictive abortion bans, partial bans, or heartbeat bills. Specifically, and here's the sad thing, in the Alabama lawmakers' eyes, their bill that Kay Ivey just signed into law, the one that she says God told her to, that act is written specifically as a bizarro 180 from the 1976 Roe v. Wade decision. And they did that because Alabama wants somebody to sue them so that they can take their law, put it beside Roe v. Wade's law, and have Roe v. Wade kicked out of existence. And the bad thing is, Chris, a lot of judicial experts say we are within centimeters of that being a reality. Do you think they're right?
I think they're right. I mean, look, for example, the heartbeat abortion you just mentioned. Signed into law with states like Mississippi, Ohio this year, and Kentucky. And they have other states like Missouri, South Carolina, Florida, Texas, I believe, Tennessee, are considering similar proposals. They want to follow lock and step with that. What you have is a wave of turn the clock back. You're not off. If you can pull this off, if you're the draconian Republicans and you want to pull this off to say that we control a woman's body, that we can tell this woman what to do with her body or not, we control that. We control anything else. It's just a matter of a proposal. So again, yes, you can't have segregation. Yes, you can have martial law. Yes, you can have other amendments that they seem being more control from a governmental standpoint.
You know, and this is the thing. A lot of people don't know what the words agency over body or body autonomy. They don't understand that those words are actually very, very hard to define, at least over the course of an entire human history, hard to define how we've treated women's body autonomy and, you know, once again, physical domain, sovereign domain here, how we've treated those bodies versus our own. Now, when it comes to this bill, and this is the thing that you've got to admire about the Alabama bill, it is so Republican, okay? So Republican that literally, if you feel that you have conceived a child, you can claim it on your taxes. And that's just like Georgia's bill that did the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So if you can conceive it, you can claim it on your taxes. Not that much of a rallying cry, but I mean, seriously, is there anything more than tax breaks start at conception that could be any more of a banner for the GOP?
Well, it goes by under their flag at times. And, you know, you may have people, for example, who are, say, of a Catholic faith, you know, who believe that abortion, you know, is not the way to go. But at the same time, when you, this whole thing about separation of church and state is almost non-existent. I mean, like, just like you and myself and others went to school, learned about separation of church and state, it was jumped into our heads. But yet the people who currently are in government don't want to hear about that. No, we don't want to talk about that. I mean, yeah, that's the law, but we could have amendments around the law. We could make up our own laws. We could make up our own laws to make sure that you stay in step because we tell you to do these things. And you get out of line, especially if you're a doctor, you go to jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah, now see, this is one of the things that really gets me is because when we talk about doctors and their whole role in this, a lot of doctors are like, look, I took an oath to receive the training, do this job that I do. This oath is something that is, well, older than even the modern Western medicine is. It goes all the way back to Greek philosophy. And it's something recognized worldwide. If I went to another hospital in any language and said the words Hippocratic Oath, they would know the first line of that is, first off, do no harm. And if a doctor can take that oath and still be willing to provide abortion, then that should tell you something about how the medical field in general feels is the safety and validity of all of these arguments about what is and isn't a person. Am I off base there?
No, you're not. And again, when you look at the line in the sand between both of these parties when it comes to, for example, this situation with Alabama, the vote again was 25-6. The majority of the women that were a part of this voted against it. And all this whole Republican party, so they had to be given credit where credit is due. I'm not wishing anything bad on Governor Ivey, but what if her daughter or niece or grandchild that's female was unfortunately raped? And they said, I'm not going to keep this child. You know, I was raped. I don't want it inside me. So because of the law that you signed into play, Governor, would you allow that or would you give what your family member wanted to request? And then you go do a quiet backdoor abortion if that was the play.
You know, and I mean, we've got like 2 minutes here before the break. So this is the thing. Roe v. Wade was based off of a 3-judge panel down in Texas that told a bunch of doctors back in 1973, look, you need to go out there and gather us empirical data as to what is actually happening with abortion. They basically did their research and came back and said, look, after 2 years of studying, we have 36 known deaths because of inadequate abortion-type procedures performed by people not medically sound. That 3-judge decision was one of the cases cited at the Supreme Court level that eventually led to the decision we call Roe v. Wade. And the reason that decision was so impactful is because a group of medical professionals got together, showed real data of back alley abortions killing people, showed real data as to what could be the benefits of giving a woman agency over her own body, and then said, look, even us, an institution that says we will do no harm, agrees that in this case, we are doing harm by doing nothing at all. And a lot of people forget what pre-Roe v. Wade world was like, Chris. And it was a very scary, bloody place.
Yes, it was.
And here's the thing that really makes me hurt at the end of the day is because when we talk about Roe v. Wade, people think that right now that's the major decision that's ruling abortion right. But it's not. The Alabama and Georgia and other states, because of a 1990 decision between Planned Parenthood and I believe the it was a Texas case that made it all the way to the Supreme Court, that case actually overwrote part of Roe v. Wade, allowing states to make religious or other moral exceptions to abortion. Now, Alabama and others is pushing that one step further. Can we see a ban of Roe v. Wade? Some experts say we could be about a month or so away from that. Chris, we got to take a break. When we get back, we'll cover more news and, oh my God, Trump too. It's the Shaggy G Good Show.
Much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. Oh boy, did we cover a lot of news ahead of this segment, but we'll probably cover more in this segment. If you missed any one of them, you can actually find us anywhere fine podcasting is served. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. I would be the host of that show, Shaggy Jenkins. Joining me, of course, would be the guy that has all the information and way better a voice. Please welcome from the Windy City, Chris Bass.
Thank you, Shaggy. You're far too kind, man. Look, we have good voices, man. I know people that say, look, you know, it's the balance of two voices, knowing it is what it is. I don't think nobody's better. I mean, I guess my home beginnings are very humble. I mean, I had this voice all my life. I mean, I remember one point in high school, I was a cross between, and if you don't know these people, go Google them. I was a cross between Pee Wee Herman and James Earl Jones. And that's not a good look for me at the time. I didn't sound right.
Connect the dots. La, 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 la. You know what I mean? Gosh, I would like to think that my first breaks on air sounded kind of like Mike Judge's early creations, Beavis and Butthead, and it just depended on which day of the week, depended on which one I sounded like. But, Chris, talking about things that sound kind of off, maybe not perfectly in tune with the way that they should be, can we talk for a second about Trump's inner circle and other Republicans in the GOP using their official party platforms to campaign for their presidential guy?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
You know, this is one of the things that's weird. Not too long ago, we had Kellyanne Conway. Everybody knows it's Kellyanne Conway. I mean, it's not like we like that fact. We know her. We regret that we do, but we do know her. But moving on, when it comes to Kellyanne Conway, at one point, she actually used her official platform as one of the chief advisors to the president in his cabinet to endorse, at that time, daughter Ivanka Trump's fashion line. Now, you'll remember that Ivanka Trump's fashion line eventually collapsed and she got rid of all of the properties because nobody bought it. But Kellyanne Conway, during a Fox and Friends interview, basically said there's nothing wrong with telling people about good products and Ivanka Trump makes good product. Fact of the matter is, Chris, there is something wrong with that, and it's called the Hatch Act. Do Do you know what that is?
Please explain, Shaggy.
Oh, I love making fun of past laws. Okay, so there was this whole scandal not too long ago in American history, early as 20th century, in fact, where people started using their official title, their official public service position, to levy political favor. In other words, they were starting a little bit of what was called political nepotism. Hey, I'm going to get in here, and if you're one of the good old boys, I'll get you in, and we'll keep everybody else locked out. Nah. Well, that kind of system was found to be stupid, so we got rid of it. And with the Hatch Act, we told all politicians, especially those surrounding the president, do not campaign for your guy's office. You can't do it. It's against the law. It is an abuse of power. Now, of course, there's very little in the way of enforcement should you be found guilty of the Hatch Act, which, if I'm not mistaken, Kellyanne Conway over the Ivanka Trump thing was. But knowing that Donald Trump never lets something happen without it becoming a pattern. Chris, over the last couple of months, not only has members of his official cabinet, members of, directors of other departments under the Trump administration, and even senators and House representatives, don, wear, or show the MAGA hat as kind of an underhanded support for Trump, or have openly come out and said, Trump, he's our man. If he can't beat immigrants, nobody can. But this is all a violation of the Hatch Act. Chris, how do we feel about living in a country where time and time again, now politicians are getting to pick favorites and we have no way to stop them?
We're in a sad disarray in our country and our government. And let's look at what you just said. Anybody who's in a position of power and influence, make sure that they and their people are well taken care of. It's the classic, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. I take care of my own, you take care of yours. I got to get mine, you got to get yours mentality. And just because it's more of a street vernacular doesn't mean it doesn't rise up to the high ranking of members of government. Because it's the same thing. You just justify, just change the wording. Case in point, we look at the movie, let me go back, not the movie, but we look at history. Say the five boroughs in New York. A lot of those people who came from that area were street thugs and rose to power in politics. The Irish, for example, a lot of them went into law enforcement. But before, Irish were known for drinking a lot and being drunkards and then being in the pubs. And then, you know, causing all this ruckus. And then when they call for the law enforcement to come, they put them in wagons. They start nicknaming them paddy wagons out of them, you know, because of mostly Irish people. I'm not saying anything out of pocket. Go back to your history for yourself. And then eventually, in time, they stopped doing that and went into power into becoming police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Check your history. A lot of Irishmen and Irish descent people started from there and then went into law enforcement. So my point is, you get to a point where, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And a lot of those street thugs and urchins and gang members, you want to call them, became politicians. So the history was soiled from the beginning. Doesn't mean things haven't changed. There's a different era, different time, and a different name for it. Say, for example, real quick, before with when you have loan banks. Yeah, loan sharks on the street. You borrow some money from a loan shark, we got to pay a 25 or 30% interest on it. You just made it legal down the road with banks and things like that. So you do your history. A lot of stuff came from the street, and then they made it more cleanup and made it by law. And so the same applies to this, I believe, as well.
You know, one of the things that really gets me about this story is it does seem that, at least in modern politics, Chris, have we reached mafioso-type campaigning?
Yes, because the president is a wannabe pseudo-mafioso. Coming from New York, you know, he wants to create a persona that he did about being Teflon Don, being rich and he wasn't rich, branding his name out to various things like, you know, the Taj Mahal and to Trump Airlines and to, I think he had Trump steaks at one point. All this Trump stuff all went to hell in the handbasket because there was no profit off of it. So again, this persona of that you're the boss, that you're a leader, that somebody follows what you say and do. Yeah, it's that mafioso mentality.
You know, one of the things that really kind of gets you about this story with everybody coming out and basically, like I said, illegally doing things like having Trump's Make America Great Again hat on their desk so that everybody that comes into their official government office sees that political bit of propaganda. Now, and that's exactly what it is. It's a political slogan put in a place of prominence to elicit some sort of support or, you know, curiosity about our guy. Okay, look, when we talk about all of this, though, one of the things that you got to bring up, and it's absolutely crazy that we have to keep going back to this, is Donald Trump, when he was talking to Michael Cohen ahead of the 2016 election, he thought he was going to lose, and he called what he was going to do the greatest infomercial in American history for whatever kind of Trump things that he wanted to build up, right? Well, the plan went south, and he won, and now he's stuck being the president of the United States. So this week, we found out that that event happening, him actually winning an election that he intended to lose, has had some dire financial effects on the president. As of lately, the report came out at the beginning of this week that all of Donald Trump's properties, golf courses, hotels around the world, resorts, whatever have you, if it's in Donald Trump's holdings right now, it is actually showing underperforming. This guy was over $1 billion in debt by the end of the 1980s, and now, this week, news comes out that, once again, all of his quote-unquote financial empire is actually in a big nosedive downward spiral. So is it any kind of, I don't know, logical progression that at the beginning of the week, we're talking about Donald Trump being in financial ruin? On Tuesday, we're talking about the judge overhearing whether or not Donald Trump can keep his tax records away from House investigators. By the way, that judge came out and in a public statement said, you know what? Not a lot of people have ever used executive privilege. Oh, I'm sorry. Nobody has ever used executive privilege to cover up a tax request. 99.999, actually 100% of the time the courts have been in existence, we've always sided with the federal government. In this case, I'm going to go ahead and say that my decision will come swiftly, but it's looking like I'm going to follow precedent. So Donald Trump, in his obstructionistic kind of behavior that he thought was going to have a big payoff this week, even that has failed, Chris. So is it any wonder why now all of his cronies are grandstanding for him?
Well, I think the one thing that Trump seems to really take issue with is about his wealth and about his money. Case in point, go back to when he was being roasted on Comedy Central. He said, you can make fun of me, don't make fun of my money. And don't make fun of me, you know, not being rich. See, that's the sore point with him, going back to day one about not showing his taxes. So anything business related that he takes to heart, if he's deemed a failure, which he is, as a soft point for him. So what do? You have your corners around you to build up your legacy, to build up, you know, your quote-unquote brand still, and say that, you know, he's still a good businessman, you know, he's still this and he's that, and keep the, you know, the fireside chat going when it comes to Trump and his business sense. And even though a lot of people are going against that and saying, well, Mr. Trump, you know, that newspaper article came out, you know, and we saw all these discrepancies that happened over your lifetime, what about that? So, again, it's false news or fake news, or anyone wants to call it. It goes against that when you have this setup where whoever or whomever goes against Trump and has these stories against him is automatically fake news. The point is that me in my lifetime, and I've been in broadcasting now for a while, I've never seen anything like this where, again, the president is in the news every day of the week. And all this can't be fake news. Got to be some validity to it. not all these news organizations are out just to get a quick buck, even though they have to, you know, the standpoint of, you know, ancillary profit skills. But the step, the fact remains is there is some truth out there. And we got to a point now, it's either his truth or the truth, and somewhere in the middle is right there.
Yeah, because what everybody has been looking at this week as far as what is truth and what is not truth has had us have Steve Mnuchin basically come out and said, you know what? Nobody in the House is ever going to see Trump's records. And then the judge coming out and saying, well, actually, I might side with them. The most fascinating part, though, is this. Chris, a lot of times during the aftermath of Bill Clinton's presidency, all the way through Barack Obama's presidency, before we even got to the 2016 election, the two benchmarks in American history for judicial proceedings against the executive branch of the United States government were, in order, Watergate and the Whitewater investigation. In Trump's lawyer, I think his name is Kosovoy.
Yeah,
very good Russian-sounding name, Kosovori.
Yeah.
But Comrade Kosovori said in his in his opening statements that, you know what? Those two precedented trials of the actual checks and balances designed in the Founding Fathers document for this country working, those two examples were exemplifying governmental overreach and should therefore prove that the current investigation into Donald Trump, like Whitewater and Watergate, is nothing but political grandstanding for gaining votes. Thoughts?
You know, let's also look at part of history when you had Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. They had sworn testimony back in the day under oath about criminal proceedings. You had Reagan with Iran-Contra. You had Clinton with Monica Lewinsky. And even though Clinton admitted about testifying truthfully and testifying are two different things. Do you testify because you got caught, or do you testify because it's the truth? And I believe in that situation, going back to Clinton, is he got caught. Because remember the old now infamous line, I did not have sex with that woman. That type of thing. He did lose his law practice because of what happened. He couldn't practice law anymore during that time of his presidency. But it's the fact that when you are put to the fire of what you're being involved in, and we go to these hearings and testimonies, it's again, you're going to get the truth as that person views the truth. Now, is the truth, again, and once again, the truth is to be redefined depending on the person's lens or hearing, what they believe and what they see. So, when you're dealing with that, I think human nature should step in. A lot of us are blinded by the party that belong to, whether it's Democrats or Republicans or somewhere in the middle. You can get to a point where you could be led blindly if you're not careful. Because of your allegiance and your truthfulness to the party that you have this strong bond with. But I think human nature might say, oh, no, wait a minute. I really don't know about that. Let's go back to Trump. So here's Trump being a part of this party, the Republican Party. But again, I said before, of past articles and people that I know work in politics, there is a rift between GOP, traditional GOP people, and Trumpsters. It's like two different worlds combined. You may in the future might have, you know, an implode. Why? Because you have two different schools of thought. And again, it's like, okay, if I'm part of GOP, for the original GOP that comes from, I don't want him representing me. Even though I got him by default, I don't need that. That's the one thing I don't need. And again, the infighting that happens is behind closed doors, obviously. The only way, again, we'll see in the future when it comes to situations like this is that you have to be as honest as you can be. Not a made-up truth, but the truth as it is. Citizens of this country are tired of being lied to. They're tired of having this president, the ones who are. They're tired of having the embarrassment. Not only the embarrassment, some of us know who believe this man is the embarrassment of this country, embarrassment globally. They would take our lead, other countries, for us. They don't anymore. Why? Because we're a laughingstock. We have a president who has just refused to be connected, to be empathetic, to be a president as a president should. And we don't have that. We have someone who is obviously maniacal, obviously vile, obviously is about him and nobody else. And again, I said from day one, if you support this man, behavior, take politics out of the way, his behavior, if you subscribe to that, there's something the hell is wrong with you.
Yeah, because remember, the moral majority, the silent majority, as they used to be called, full-heartedly endorses a man that is known notoriously for paying off hookers for adulterous affairs, of which he has had multiple, that has led to, on two occasions, some pretty expensive publicly shaming divorces. So if this is your pinnacle, as guys like even Pat Robinson, Lindsey Graham, we've heard it from Mike Pompeo, these guys that say, even Giuliani recently came out and said, Donald Trump is Jesus's choice for president to lead this country. How is it that a guy so amoral still elicits so much support from the quote-unquote moral community, Chris?
Because you redefine, you justify, and you lie. Like you, you know, Shaggy, I'm a fan of wrestling, especially old school wrestling back in the day. There was a wrestler, a man named Guerrero, back in the day. His key line was, I lie, I cheat, I steal. Yeah, that's the president. And when you have that credo, that's what it is. So he's letting you know who he is. People subscribe to that because they're like-minded. The classic birds of a feather. You know, they're going to protect each other because their mindset is evolving around that particular room or wherever else they are. You know, that's how they rock and roll. So having said all that, a president who, you said before about being immoral, and you label him as, you know, as God's choice. First of all, which God are you referring to? To some people, Satan could be God. You know, so I don't know what God you're referring to when it comes to him. Also the fact that you have to justify what's happening. Case in point, but you mentioned about Michael Cohen. So there's an article that came out about Michael Cohen saying that Jerry Falwell Jr. and his wife had some some pictures out there that were not necessarily moral. You know, they're probably doing the do or doing the nasty, whatever it was. And so Michael Cohen had to be the fixer, got rid of those photos, and then here comes Jerry Falwell Jr. During the campaign back in 2016, supporting Trump. Again, it's a favor. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. You take care of me, I take care of you. And then if somebody got rid of your pictures of you being knocking a nude with your wife and got it all away, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's all right with me. Yeah, he's good people. Why? Because he took care of me.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, though, is that this quid pro quo behavior, this mafioso type of mentality seems almost endemic to this administration. So much so that we are now saying that Watergate wasn't the actual rightful duty of the legislative branch to check the power and balance of the executive branch. No, now we're saying that case was overreach, and Donald Trump should be above the law. This has been 1 week where it seems like, and maybe it's every week since the Mueller report came out, Chris, but does Donald Trump seem more and more like, you know, earlier how he was talking about Hungary's Prime Minister Orban and how great he was, and this is a guy that locked up journalists, shut down publications, and basically took over free and open expression in his country? Is Donald Trump stepping closer to an imperialist president?
Of course. When he admires other leaders like, you know, Kim Jong-un of, you know, North Korea, and now you mentioned before about this other gentleman, yeah, because they, as far as I'm concerned, they do things that I think he admires and wants to put into his own way of doing things here in the country, here in America. So locking up journalists, Well, yeah, because remember, the media is evil. You know, the media is not out, you know, to look after you, to look after, to try to get after me and fake news and everything else. We go back to that story months ago with the reporter from the BBC covering the president. He almost got himself killed because he had this hype of fervor going on the audience, pointing him out, singing him out. And we use rhetoric like the media is evil. In most people's mind, when you talk about evil, that means evil has to be denounced or destroyed, depending on your mindset. So you got someone who's doing his job, he's part of the media, if he's evil, he needs to get out of here. Jim Acosta from CNN had mentioned stories about, you know, people threatening his life. Not emailing him or calling him, they got his number, threatening him right there, you know, face to face. I'm going to take you out. I wish you die. I'll kill you myself. What kind of world we live in when you can't even do your job? Because Adolf Hitler put into play that if you see anybody that's going against me, going against the throne, they should be dealt with. They're fake news. The media is evil. That's dangerous rhetoric. And so going back to what you said about Switzerland and other countries that people he might admire, if he takes some components from them and then use it for his own gain, he'll try to do so. Why? Because he admires that. And when you talk about lock up the media, lock up reporters, that's right up his alley. It could be right around the corner. Again, these things they would have said, say, 8-10 years ago. But because we're living in strange times now, that's not far-fetched. It's definitely reality.
Yeah. The thing that gets me about this whole story is this week we've watched the United States basically go down into uncivil unrest over this whole case of whether or not our president is an okay guy or he's a dirty crook. It's also came out this week that while we're going through all of this soul searching as a country, Vladimir Putin, nonetheless, has been having the time of his life on the world stage, laughing it up that these silly Americans think that I could do anything, like hack an election. Stupid. Oh, I'm sorry, I do not speak any English. Vladimir Putin speaks fluent English, but he always pretends that he doesn't for political advantage. But that's just going to have to be where we leave it today. Chris, this week, Trump has burned our country and Putin has laughed at us. Are we happy?
No.
Everybody else, try to stay up with your spirits until then. Be safe. Love you, mean it. Get in, bye. We're out.